This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Welcome back to the Ghost Bunny Podcast. I'm your host, Bridget Marquardt, with a brand new episode for you. My guests today are XX Paranormal Communications, Mackenzie Concher, Julia Alley, and Christine Hendrickson. You might be able to guess because of their names, but XX Paranormal Communications is an all-female paranormal investigation group based out of Colorado and founded in 2018. The XX name comes from the two chromosomes biologically making up females. XXPC conducts both commercial and residential investigations. The investigators on the team pride themselves in incorporating science, skepticism, and intuition into their investigations. Over the years, XXPC has had the pleasure of investigating mines. That's so cool. Restaurants, retail locations, museums, libraries, and more. The team is passionate about educating the public about the paranormal and investigative methods, and of course, pursuing answers to the unexplained. XX Paranormal Communications has been featured in Business Insider, Denver Post, 5280, American Paranormal Magazine, and on Fox 31, Rocky Mountain PBS, Death Chats with Sarah podcast, as well as Ghoul Gab, You, Me, and WTF Was That podcast. And today, they're here with us. Ladies, thank you so much for doing the show today.
Thank you so much for having us, Bridget. We're so excited to be here.
Me too. Okay, so you guys were asking before the show, and I was like, wait, let's keep it for the show, how I found you. And I used to do a podcast a while ago, and I stopped doing it, and I started doing this one on my own. And I'm going to Colorado next week, and I was like, you know what I need is some good ghost stories from Colorado. So I went online, and I was looking up different ghost stories, and it's not the first time I've done this because we go every year. So every year I'm kind of like, what can I do paranormal-wise while we're here? Kind of sneak it in because everybody else isn't into all of that stuff. And I came across, you know, a bunch of different sites and everything, but then I came across a YouTube channel with this all-female paranormal team, and I was like, I'm intrigued. I'm so into this, and I'm watched a couple of YouTube videos with you guys, and I was like, this is exactly who I want to talk to for my new podcast.
Love it.
Yeah,
so
I found the email and contacted you guys, and here we are. My first question for you guys is, how do you all know each other?
Yeah, I can start. So Christine and I think, knew each other first. We were on a previous paranormal team together. And then Julia and I were also on a different team together. And Julia and I ended up breaking off of that team with two other ladies and founded XX. And then I had always kept in touch with Christine, invited her to be a guest investigator on our investigations, and eventually convinced her to come over to XX.
Awesome. And how did you guys know that you were all into the paranormal? Like, what was the first time? Because I know sometimes it's hard. Like, you don't know if other people are into it or not. So you're kind of like afraid to say something. Or how did you guys all know that you were into it?
Well, we met. I was on that prior team.
So it was because you were already on the team together.
Right. And Mackenzie was brought on as a new investigator. And we just would always kind of team up. And we just really enjoyed investigating together. And what we found was our energy just worked really well. And we just had awesome results when we worked together. So Mackenzie left and I eventually figured it out and I left too. And I was so excited when they started the new team and was able to be that guest investigator. And then it was kind of that chemistry. Met Julia and it was that same deal. I just love investigating with these ladies. We just all get along so well and we think the same way. We want to do things the same way. And that just feels so right after being in a wrong situation.
Yes.
Yeah. And the energy, I think, is just so important when it comes to investigating, being open to it and having similar approaches as far as going in with skepticism, but also trusting your intuition and also bringing in the science to verify. So we just all had kind of similar goals, I think, that united all of us.
Yeah, I think that's really important to have that on the team. And I know that so many teams kind of have their own way of doing things. And on one hand, I feel like that's kind of fun to kind of join different groups and sort of see the way they do things and stuff. But you can definitely tell when it's a team that you vibe with and that's how you would do things too or not. Well, I'm curious, for each one of you, what was your very first paranormal experience?
Julia, you want to go first?
You mean I have to talk? So my very first one that I can recall anyway, I was probably about 9 or so, maybe even younger, between 7 and 9. I had a record player, and I'm dating myself with this, but I had a record player up in my bedroom, and I would be downstairs 3 levels down and watching TV, and my record player would turn on by itself, and then just the volume would increase and get louder and louder until I went up there. So that was probably my first one.
Okay, that would be spooky.
I didn't really
mind. Go ahead, Christine.
You know, my first paranormal, there's a couple things that come to mind. The first time that I had an experience that kind of made me go, was actually after I had just started reading a book about how to contact your spirit guides. And I had been reading about souls who committed suicide and some of the things they might go through. And that night, the only dream that I remembered was faces coming towards me and asking me for help. And when I woke up, I was actually on top of my bed, on top of the blankets, with laying with my arms straight out. Yeah, I didn't finish reading the book for a couple of years after that.
Yeah, that actually gave me like the chills, and it's so hot in here right now, but it gave me the chills.
Yeah, that sounds intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about you, Mackenzie?
The first experience that I had, I was very little. I think I was probably maybe 4 or 5 years old. It was at the first house we lived in. And my grandmother was staying the night, so she was sleeping in my bed with me. And I remember trying to wake her up because I saw something in my curtains. And it was really strange and unusual. It wasn't what I expected. It just kind of looked like, I don't know, a ghost carrying a suitcase, and it had sunglasses. Like, it was super strange. But I think what had happened is whatever it was presented itself in a way that was approachable for me as a child to see it. But it was like waving goodbye, like it was saying goodbye. And I know that I wasn't sleeping because I kept trying to wake my grandma up to show her. I'm like, look, you know. So I knew that I was awake. I knew it wasn't a dream. But I still can't explain it today. So I don't really know exactly what that was, but I think it always kind of piqued my interest and made me curious about it. And then as an adult, I guess my real first paranormal experience was investigating the melting pot. I was trying to use my mass communication degree, and I saw a Craigslist ad to be a TV host, and got a part for a co-host for a TV pilot. And we went to the melting pot in Littleton, and there was a paranormal team that showed me how to use the equipment, and they were getting a lot of activity. And I was like, wow, there's really something to this. So I was hooked from there.
Wait, was it a paranormal TV show that you were going out for?
Yeah, the TV pilot didn't end up getting picked up, but it was a lot of fun. We did like a full pilot episode and shot it at the Melting Pot restaurant in Littleton. And met some great people and still friends with Luana, with that team that we worked with today. So
that's, I always forget that's how you met Luana.
I know, circa like 2011. So
yeah.
That is so cool. I'm going to get to all the places that you've investigated and everything, including the melting pot, but I just have to throw it out here right now because you mentioned it. I'm blown away. There's two, not one melting pot on your list, but two melting pots.
Yep. Very different energies. One in Littleton and one in Louisville. There's like a cowboy type spirit in the one in Louisville. And then the one in Littleton, there were stories that I heard about an espresso machine, which I don't even know how much those weigh, but they're incredibly heavy, flying off the bar. So I didn't witness that, but I had heard stories about it. And it used to be a jail. And then it also was a library that had burned down at one point. So lots of history.
That was going to be my next question. I was going to ask you, do you think it has anything to do with it being the melting pot? Or do you think it's the locations that these restaurants are in?
I think the particular locations, I'm trying to remember, I think there might have been some old mining equipment potentially in the one in Louisville that could have maybe had something attached to it. But yeah, the one in Littleton definitely had a lot of things happen there with the library. And then when it was a jail, I believe someone had actually like got shot in the jail.
Okay, so there's history in the building there.
Yes, definitely.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling Yuzu Mango IQ Mix Hydration Mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.
So in 2018, when you guys decided to start your own team, was it just because you're leaving the other team and you're forming your own? Is that like when it all came together? Or was there like a catalyst for that happening?
Yeah, I think, you know, Julie and I were definitely talking, and a couple of other ladies and I were on that team and talking. And I think we just had goals of, we want to make sure that if we're putting any evidence out there, and we're very careful to call things evidence, we, you know, leave things up to the public to decide when we put things out usually. But we wanted to make sure what we were putting out was legitimate, that we could trust that what we had captured wasn't manipulated. We knew we were putting it out. And then also some other issues on our prior teams were safety. We wanted to make sure that, you know, I had heard stories about teams that had gone to locations and they forgot to lock up, and a houseless person, you know, broke in and attacked some of the investigators and things like that. So safety is a big priority. And especially when we're doing public investigations, talking about, you know, spiritual protection and boundaries. And also, you know, some of these places we're going are, they can be dangerous. We've gone to mines, we've gone, you know, to cemeteries, and there's a lot of hazards if you're not careful, where people could fall and get hurt or get lost. Cause like Gold Hill, for instance, and kind of in the middle of nowhere. So if people don't have a map, they could get lost, you know? So things like that. I think we all were like, let's prioritize safety. Let's prioritize making sure we're putting out what we believe may actually be paranormal. And we wanted to be able to trust each other.
Definitely. Yeah. I was curious, since the name of your paranormal group and everything, are you open to males being part of the group?
Potentially. What do you ladies think?
I would say more so, not necessarily part of the group, but we are definitely open to male investigators coming as a guest investigator.
Yeah.
I think what we've all experienced in the past, and I know the team that Mackenzie and I were on, just, you know, one very strong male domineering personality that really just took over. Mm-hmm. And the difference of working with these two incredible, awesome women is that it's equal. Like, yeah. This is their team and I'm an investigator with them, but they've always made me feel like equal. It's never been a question and there's just respect. And I think that's the biggest thing too, that we respect each other.
Right.
It's that simple. And it makes such a difference.
Well, and it makes you unique as well. And it's something that like caught my eye. I'm like, oh, because there's not enough female representation out there, and especially not on television shows or, you know, any of the kind of media that's out there. So I felt like it was great. And I was like, I have to feature these guys.
Awesome. Yeah. When you watch the shows, the women are always the backup or just an investigator, mm-hmm. and they're never out front.
Or a psychic.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys do both commercial and residential hauntings. And I was curious if you have a preference.
I think we've just kind of fallen into a lot of the more so of the commercial. We've been working with a lot of historic locations or older locations or businesses that have reached out to us. And we've kind of found a niche in that. You know, we've worked with museums and libraries and just some of these older locations that really take a lot of respect and due diligence just to make sure that we're being respectful of the property. You know, there's artifacts sometimes, and just making sure, you know, we're being very respectful of the space of the people mm-hmm. who work there. So I think we've kind of built referrals on that, where now some of these locations are referring us to other locations, which is amazing. So I think, you know, we've done a couple of residentials, but those can be kind of tough. A lot of people that reach out to us on those are concerned that they might have a demonic presence or something more negative or evil. So when we see those, we typically try to reach out to someone that specializes in that field for our spiritual protection, and also because it's just not an area that we specialize in. So we want to make sure that that's being handled appropriately.
Right. I'm curious too, and not that you'll know the answer to this because you refer them elsewhere, but I wonder, I feel like a lot of people are just so afraid of the paranormal that sometimes things are happening and they automatically assume the devil's in my house, I have a demon or whatever, because they're scared and they don't know the differences or like what's really happening. And so they just automatically think it because that's what they see on TV. That's what's happening in The Conjuring and, you know, all these other movies.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's so they just jump to it.
And I think with the residential stuff, there's kind of a responsibility to try to help these people figure out what's going on. And we can't guarantee that we're going to be able to communicate or see what's happening that they're experiencing. If we don't see it, there's a responsibility there. And the one that I was on, again, a prior team, there was a little girl involved and she was seeing things in her room. And what we kind of got to is she probably has some abilities, and talking to mom about how you talk and, you know, when you see something, when something happens, and just really kind of leading them down that way, like Mackenzie said, of spiritual protection. This is here. And we had some ideas of what was going on after a couple, we went multiple times, but I felt like it felt more important. Like I felt like I had to try to help these people. And I think sometimes that stress, that's not there when we're going to a museum or a cemetery and investigating.
Yeah. I definitely prefer the commercial. The other way is too much responsibility.
Yeah. You've got to take it seriously. I mean, I would say the locations that we've investigated have in general been very positive. We've had good experiences. We've been able to have good communication. You know, we've been some other places where we've maybe felt uncomfortable or whatever we've been communicating with has asked us to leave. You know, and we are not antagonizing what we're speaking with either. So if, you know, if they ask us to leave, we're going to be respectful of that. So I think that's part of the reason why maybe we haven't had some of these more negative experiences, and also some of the locations that we've been to. And passing along some of those more difficult cases to professionals in that area.
Yeah, I would think that with a lot of the museums and things like that you guys do, probably the most important thing, I would think, is the historical aspect of it, getting the facts right and the history right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of times that can get mumbled and messed up, especially when you're trying for that good story or that, you know.
Yeah. And we like to go into locations not knowing a whole lot about the location and just kind of seeing what comes up, what names come through on the spirit box, or what names come through intuitively to us that we try and verify with the spirit box or the other pieces of equipment. And then verifying with the people who work there. You know, it's been pretty cool. I mean, Julia, I was thinking of the at Sandstone Ranch, you had an experience where you were able to verify that with one of the workers there. And then Christine, we've had one at 4 Mile Historic Park too, where, you know, certain things come through and then you ask the people who work there and they're like, oh my gosh, yes, here's who that person was that came up. So.
Yeah, that's so exciting.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Speaking of that too, like intuition and everything, in your bio, it says the team prides themselves in incorporating science, skepticism, and intuition into their investigations. And I was curious, is there one of you that is more skeptical than the other and one of you that's more intuitive than the other? Like, do you guys have different roles, you think, or does it all kind of come together as one?
I think I'm probably more skeptic than the other two, maybe. I don't know. We're all fairly on the same level, though, honestly.
You have a really strong intuition, though, Julia. Like, you're usually right on.
Yeah.
As skeptical as you can be, you really are usually right on.
Yeah, and I would say we all kind of have developed that intuition over time. I think the more and more you investigate and the more you do that, the more you kind of open up to things and you're more sensitive to it, I think. I've been investigating with her for years now, and I've seen her skills develop as far as actually just recognizing what's happening. You know, Christine is sensitive to touch. So she can actually feel when the spirits are around her or if they're touching her. And I like to kind of mess with her a little bit on investigations and, you know, be like, oh, if you're
favorite trigger object.
Yes. So I'm like, oh, if you're in the room right now, can you touch Christine? She can feel you, you know? So at the beginning, when we started investigating, I don't think she knew exactly what was happening. And over time she started to realize like, okay, I have this ability. And now she's starting to kind of pay more attention to it, harness it, develop it. And I would say for myself, I have some mediumship abilities and, you know, they're not super strong abilities, but I would say that every now and then I will get words or names or certain things that come through to me. And I've now learned that I need to trust that and say it out loud, you know, like, oh, I'm getting this name. Is there anyone with that name here with us? And then try and validate it with the equipment. So we try and kind of investigate with our intuition first and then validate with the equipment, which is really kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, something I was going to touch on that you just said is it's trusting that intuition, because I feel like we all have it and we experience it, but we don't trust it. Like, Christine, if you were being touched or whatever, you might have just felt like, oh, I must have walked through a spider web or something, or like, what was that? My jacket's bumping my leg or something. You like try and write it off as something else. And then the same with like getting names or getting information. You're like, why am I thinking of this all of a sudden? my brain is like not concentrating on what I'm here or whatever. It's the kidding.
Or you think you're just making it up.
Yeah. But you have to just like you said, saying it out loud, because it might be wrong, but it might be right too. And I think the more you verbalize it and the more you get like, the more that it's verified that you're correct and everything, that then you start trusting it more and you start feeling more comfortable with it.
Well, and I think, and because we've all been together for quite a few years now, I mean, Mackenzie and I have been investigating together for almost 10 years. Like, I won't even realize things. And you pointed it out once, how I start doing, you know, whatever I do, I'll start do some, and Mackenzie knows she's feeling something. And so she'll ask, and then I'm like, oh yeah, you know, if I'm not saying it. So there are little physical things that I'll do that she notices and that she'll pick up on. And that encourages it too.
Yeah. I noticed one of the things that happens with me too, is that all of a sudden I'll be like, I will gender the spirit that I think is there. And I don't even realize that I'm doing it. I'll be like, oh, he's walking over here or something. And then somebody's like, oh, how'd you know it was a guy? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if it's a guy. I just felt like there was masculine energy. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's
the first time. The first time I really got touched, it did kind of creep me out. It was at an event, and I knew it was a male presence. And there was another guy from the team standing across this. It was the first time we had been in the basement of this building, and it literally just felt like a hand was stroking my face and my head. And it was cold. And he said, Chris, and it was in pitch black basement. He said, Christine, I can only see half of you. Like, there's a dark shadow. Ooh. And he took one step towards me. And I said, don't come any closer, because I knew. And then he was gone.
Wow.
And he's like, the shadow's gone. But that was one of the first times where I was like, okay, I'm feeling this. Like, this is happening. And talking through it. And I just started telling people what I was experiencing. And I thought I was crazy, and everyone else thought it was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. And Julia, I feel like you are intuitive. Like, I just feel it from you.
Oh. I doubt myself a lot. Like I say, I'm probably the biggest skeptic. But I if I'm sure of something.
There's nothing wrong with that.
If I'm sure of something, I definitely say it. And just so that everybody, you know, knows. And it usually is validated, but.
Yeah. What kind of you guys said you use science. I'm curious, like, what kind of instruments you use? What science do you rely on?
Yeah. I think one of my favorite pieces of equipment is a spirit box. It's basically an AM FM transmitter. So you can go forwards or backwards. Yes, just like that. Forwards or backwards through radio stations. The one Christine is modeling is one that actually records, which is great. And you can control the speed for how fast it goes and if it's going in forward or reverse or through the stations. And the idea is that the spirits are able to communicate through the white noise. So you kind of have to differentiate whether you're hearing radio or whether you're hearing a response to your question. So over time, your ears start to get a little trained to picking up whether it's radio or a response. But, you know, some ways you can tell is, if you're getting a direct response to your question, for instance, if you're asking for a number and you hear a number right away, if you hear the same voice continue to come through and it's at different spots, you know, some, because if it's just coming through at 88.9 every time, you know, that very well could be radio. We've also had cuss words come through, which shouldn't be coming through on the radio. We've had different languages come through, you know, when we're not on, you know, a Spanish radio station or things like that. So,
and multiple voices coming through at the same time.
Yep.
So one of the funnest things about the spirit box, I think, is when you hear them having conversations.
Yeah.
And we've heard that too. Yeah. You can't fool the spirit box.
Yeah. Do you guys usually put the spirit box on reverse or do you do it regular?
I think we alternate. I think we try and do reverse. And I think we usually try and do AM as well, because AM technically doesn't have as much radio interference. But what's really neat is, like, when you're in the mountains or somewhere and you're just not getting a lot of radio coming through and you're getting those responses that are coming through very clear, it's really fun.
Yeah.
I always have trouble with the spirit box. Like, I have trouble catching the word. Like you said, you have to really train your ear, and you definitely do.
Yes.
Well, and if you're near any city or anywhere, you know, when we're in Denver, it can be really hard And if we're doing events, we'll tell people that's radio. And then they'll start to hear the radio chips coming through. When we're up in the foothills, in these mines, and you just have that clear signal, it's really a different experience when you don't have the radio chipping in.
Yeah, for sure. What other pieces of equipment do you guys like to use?
One thing, one of our newer toys is a thermal camera.
Ooh, yeah.
I have everything here. So. And let's see, I'll turn it on, put it behind my back, and we'll see if anyone's here with me.
We like to use a lot of different pieces of equipment to validate, too. You know, if we can get this on more than
my big head.
Nice.
Yeah. And Christine, you have all the equipment right now because you recently did a school thing, right?
Yes.
Tell everybody about that.
We did an event at the John Tomei Library in Georgetown, Colorado. And Mackenzie and I had previously done an investigation there with a group of amazing women. And they invited us back to do a group of middle schoolers. And I live in Clear Creek County in Colorado. And I will say one thing about living up here is the majority of kids have had experiences. So they're totally into this stuff. And it was just a trip. I mean, these kids were into it. We were getting responses with the K2. We were getting full on when we would ask, can you make it orange, red? We were getting red responses. Spent a lot of time teaching the kids how to use the dowsing rods. And, you know, they'd be holding them and they're totally still and asking a question. We getting cross and then everyone squeals. And it was just a blast. We didn't get any spirit box. And I was joking with Mackenzie that that probably was a good thing because everyone would have just screamed if we had had that. But one of the coolest things that happens, so one of the things that we've been using is, you can kind of see behind me, a laser grid. And we set this up and what I did was charged it and then I taped down the button so it's on. It's just forced on. And inevitably, the battery would wear out. This was the only thing that kept going on and off the whole night. And the kids absolutely thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I wanted, again, to show them, like, I'm not manipulating this. I picked it up, I took off the tape, and I said, look, because when I touched it, it wouldn't go on. There's the reporter that was there. I gave it to him. I said, push this button. Wouldn't go on. Put the tape back on, not on, set it on the ground, and it turned on.
That's
crazy. So, you know, stuff like that, I would almost stop. We were getting responses and the kids were like, don't stop, don't stop. And I'm like, no, I want you guys to see. We passed it around. Everyone tried to turn it on. No one could.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that I want them to see. Like, I'm not making things happen. And I will say one of the things that kind of ends up being the most possible, easy to manipulate is the K2. And that's with your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
If I have my cell phone in my pocket and I'm holding my K2, if I get a text, it's going to register.
Yeah.
And you can really easily do that if someone is listening and just sends a text when I ask that question.
Yeah.
So we have everyone at our events, all of the kids. It was awesome because they were like, we should put our phones in airplane mode. And I was like, yes. And everyone did. And we were getting crazy K2 hits. When we do that, when we're in a team, and again, the safety, we've also started using walkie-talkies between us. Because if I'm in a room and I hear something that could be Julia or Mackenzie with their group, I'm going to walkie over to them and say, hey, did you guys just walk outside? Or did someone do this? So that we can find out if it's our own noise or if there's something possibly really going on.
Yeah. And you were telling me this earlier, and I said I was really surprised that parents were letting their kids go and do this, because I just feel like it's so controversial still, even though it shouldn't be. A lot of times it is. And I was surprised, but you told me about that area.
Yeah, I think it's just special to this little area of the foothills. You know, we have a lot of mining history up here, and it's what the town was founded on. And, you know, our high school are the Clear Creek Gold Diggers. It's all about the mining history. And when I asked the kids, have any of you had experiences, literally every hand shot up. You know, parents who grew up here in different, whether it be Empire, Georgetown, Idaho Springs, Silver Plume, they've had some crazy experiences. A teacher at one of the schools, you know, and it's the worst kept secret in town that one of the elementary schools is believed to be haunted. And she showed me a picture that absolutely blew my mind.
Wow.
So I think there's just almost more of an acceptance up here.
Yeah.
You know, there are some skeptics for sure, but I think people are just a lot more open to it, just given that mining history.
Right. I can see that for sure.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to take care of yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps. Ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Okay, so you guys sent me a list of places you've been to that I totally want to get to, but I was shocked that there's a few on here or that are not on here that are like the biggest Colorado, not even Colorado haunts, but like the biggest haunts. Like the Stanley Hotel wasn't on here.
I knew you were going to talk. So I've done a little bit of investigating at the Stanley. I didn't put it on the list because I didn't feel like I got a lot of activity, and I kind of did that personally on my own time. The most activity that I got was actually in the restaurant at the hotel with K2, just kind of in the middle of dinner, having the K2 meter go on and off, but didn't really have anything crazy happen in the room. I did take the tour and go in like the tunnel area. And I could see how people might think there's orbs, but there was a ton of dust in there. So really couldn't say that was anything paranormal. Julie and Christine, have you spent any time there? I forget.
I have only walked around there. I've never stayed there as of yet. But just walking around there, I completely agree with you. The energy in the restaurant, the bar restaurant area is where the energy's at.
You know, and I think with the Stanley, I mean, their tours are big business, and it's for me, it's just a little too commercial.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we have a great local, you know, burger place. Why would you go to McDonald's kind of thing to me?
Yeah.
I think it's really, I'm sure there is energy there and activity, but it's just not my kind.
Kitty, I love it. No, I love it.
My baby.
You have to introduce.
This is Mifa.
Oh my gosh.
She's only four Siamese? Months old. Yeah.
Yes. Siamese. A teenage Siamese. Not even teenage. I feel like that we have a Siamese, and I feel like that's what he looked like. They get like this little awkward. I call it their awkward phase. And I feel like that cat is the same age as the awkward phase.
Probably.
Like all the markings aren't in yet, but they're coming.
Yep.
And they change so much. What they look like when they're a newborn kitten, they look totally different when they're adults.
Oh, yeah.
They're funny. Oh, so pretty.
She likes to lay on my chest and just suck. She suckles on her own arms.
Aw, so cute.
I thought we were going to go a totally different direction.
Well, I'm glad I clarified.
Yes, me too. But back to the Stanley. I stayed there one time, and I was in a hurry to get ready for dinner, and I plugged my curling iron in before I jumped in the shower. And when I got out, my curling iron was cold. And I was like, I thought I turned this on. So I plug it back in, I turn it back on. I run and go get dressed really quick. And I'm like, we have to meet somebody down for dinner in the restaurant. So I'm trying to rush and I go back in there and it's cold again. And I know for a fact that I turned it on this time. And this happened like several times. And we had some other like electrical issues going on. And at first I was just like, oh, old hotels, I guess, or whatever. But later, thinking back on it, I was thinking, wait, maybe it wasn't just like old electrical things. That might have been something that I was just too frantic and in a hurry to recognize.
Very well could be.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But we did the whole ghost tour and everything too.
I would love to stay in the room that Stephen King stayed in at some point. I think that would be a bucket list item. I know it books out, I think, like years in advance. So
oh God,
maybe someday XX will be able to stay in that room and do a formal investigation.
That would be nice. I wonder, do you guys know? So they used to be really welcoming to paranormal. They had the paranormal tour and all that stuff. And then I heard that they cut it off and they were like, no more. We're not doing this. But now I heard they're kind of open back up to it a little bit again. Do you guys have any idea where they stand on that?
It's hard to say. I feel like it goes in and out with different management. So one of our friends, Callie, actually used to lead the ghost tours there.
Oh, I had Callie on my old podcast.
Yes. Yeah. So she was on like the Ghost Adventures episode, I think, and things like that. So yeah, I know they used to be really open to it. So I think it kind of goes in and out. And that's with a lot of spaces. Like as an example, we investigated like the Colorado Railroad Museum, and that was a great place to go. But now they charge like an event fee that's like $1,200 or something like that. So yeah, it just totally depends on management, I think. So hard to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I didn't see Cheeseman Park on your list.
Oh, actually, you know, I think we've all been to Cheeseman. Yeah.
I haven't.
I've definitely.
I mean, I used to live two blocks from Cheeseman, so, yeah. But we never went over there. And honestly, my husband and son went to a Denver Philharmonic performance, you know, in there. And I asked if anything happened. I'm like, did you guys see anything? And they looked at me like I was crazy, you know. But I've actually never investigated there, but I know there are small groups. Local people will just get together and kind of go and see what they can find.
I've spent some time there. And again, nothing too crazy, which was surprising. I mean, given the history. Where I would really love to investigate is actually the Denver Botanic Gardens right next door on the same property. I think, I've done the tour there and definitely felt some stuff in some of the buildings, and that place I think for sure, would be active. So someday, we'll try and get in there too. So
yeah. And just to let the listeners know, Cheeseman Park in Colorado, it used to be, I think it was called Prospect Hill Cemetery. And they moved the bodies out of town. They moved the graves, the gravestones at least, but not all the bodies. Not all the bodies made it in the move, and they're still there. And they just a couple years ago still found another body, right? Like, or parts of one. Like they find them all the time over there.
It's just a big park. It's just a huge, beautiful park, and the houses around it are gorgeous. And volleyball, and people running and jogging, and it's just gorgeous. And they make a cemetery a park.
Yeah. And some people say they hear weird noises, or they run into people that seem lost and confused and don't look like they're in our time era. I don't know. So I do go there every time I go to Colorado, because we stay close by there, and I have not experienced anything there, but I do think it's a cool place. And I feel like it's a lot of people don't know when I mention it, people who aren't from Colorado, when I mention it, people are like, what's that? And I'm like, no, you have to know about this place.
I'm surprised by that, because I feel like every spooky season I see an article about Cheeseman. Like it is very well known for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, Bridget, haven't experienced anything there, but I believe people have. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Lumber Baron's Mansion. I'm just obsessed with the name for some reason. I'm like, this sounds so
Christine
epic.
And I have both been there.
That's where I got touched.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there was another investigation there also in that same basement. And probably one of my most intense experiences, the team leader guy who was in charge asked, you know, is there anyone here that you know their name? and clear as day through the spirit box, Christine came through. And I remember I laughed and I said, oh, I think they said Steve. And everyone just started laughing because I like almost couldn't believe that it was Christine.
Yeah.
So I'm at this point, when I think about it now, it probably was that male voice of whoever was touching me.
Yeah. And for the listeners, the Lumber Baron's mansion, there was two girls found murdered in that house, like in the 70s, right?
70s.
Yeah.
And it's a cold case. It's never solved.
Yeah.
It's Denver's oldest cold case. Yeah.
Oh, is it really?
Or one of them. Yeah. Because wow. It was in the mid 70s and they have zero leads. They never knew what happened.
Yeah. And then there's the Oxford Hotel. And I actually went there a couple years ago when I went to Colorado, and we went up in the haunted room. The manager led us up there.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've
had drinks at Oxford. I haven't investigated there.
Well, how cool is that bar?
That bar is one of the coolest in Denver.
Yeah. It's really neat.
Yeah.
I have gone to the Molly Brown house, but just in the gift shop. We were going to do the tour and the timing didn't work out or whatever, and so we didn't. But I hear that has a lot of activity going on.
I've been there on a tour as well and just kind of played around with like my dowsing rods and stuff. And I definitely believe that there's some energy there. But yeah, that team, there's a local team that I believe kind of has access to that, and they only work with that other team.
Okay. And then let's see, I was going to say, oh, you know which one creeps me out? And I actually made my husband drive by there the last time we were there just so I could take a picture out front. The Patterson Inn.
Oh my gosh. Would love to investigate there, but have not had the opportunity.
That one has a lot of crazy energy. And I feel like you can feel it just from pulling up outside. And just you could just feel the energy from outside that house. I don't know what the whole story is on it. I know supposedly Patterson and his wife haunt the place, but the creepy story to me is the Dobermans that jumped out of the third story window.
Yep.
Because like, what would possess two dogs to jump out a three story window?
Yep.
That just freaks me out.
Unless they saw something. Yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah, I just, ooh, it gives me the chills. And then we mentioned this before we started, but the Brown Palace Hotel.
Still on the list. I've heard so many stories about like phones ringing and no one's on the other end and phones that are disconnected and still ringing. And
yeah.
All kinds
of
stories there.
That's the main story I've heard, that the front desk will get a call from a specific room and there is not a phone in that room.
I love stuff like that though.
Oh yeah.
It's like when a stranger calls and it's coming from your house.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to your guys' list. Tell me about 4 Mile Historic Park. I don't know about it.
Yeah, so we actually have developed a really great relationship with 4 Mile Historic Park, I would say in the last couple of years. So the history behind it is that I believe it's the oldest standing building in Denver is at 4 Mile Historic Park. And the reason it's called 4 Mile is because it's technically was 4 miles from Denver. It's in kind of like this Glendale area. And I had no idea it was there, honestly, until they reached out to us. But it is a very cute little park. They do a lot of family events and things like that. They have like a giant, Clydesdale horse there. And like,
most beautiful horse.
Yeah.
All kinds of like farm animals. Yeah. And I think they have bees. Like, it's just a really cool historic spot. But I think settlers used to stop there and freshen up on their way into Denver.
It was the last stop before getting into Denver for the stagecoaches.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So there was the original part of the house had a little bar, had sleeping quarters for the men. And then that was actually a single mom who owned that. And she sold it and left and sold it to a more wealthy family who made it more of their home. And built on this beautiful Victorian style house. And they had beehives and made honey and would sell these things at the store when the stagecoach would stop.
And we heard some history last time that was super interesting. One of the ladies who works there was telling us that if you look up at the ceilings in one of the buildings, it was created by these brothers that used to make barrels. And you can see that skill set of making barrels directly translated into the beautiful like roof, like the woodwork in one of those buildings. It was really neat.
Yeah. So what made them call you guys? What was happening there?
So they reached out to us. I believe it was a referral from the Denver Firefighters Museum referred us over to them, I think. And I think they were just kind of experiencing some things, and I think they just wanted some validation of what was happening. And then once we kind of took them on some of the tours with us and they experienced some of it, I think they were like, you know, this would be so fun to open this up to the public. So now we've been kind of annually doing some public events and inviting people to come investigate with us. And the energy there is really great. So it's a great, like, if you're a first timer to paranormal stuff and want to just kind of see if you can experience something, it's really good energy.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
And we probably captured one of our best, one of our favorite. It's on our Instagram, but it's just video. And it starts out with me saying, someone's behind me. I was just feeling something behind. And then Mackenzie walked it through. And we actually captured an orb coming out of the wall, going into our flashlight, and the flashlight went on.
Yeah, I said, wow. If you're touching Christine, can you turn on the flashlight? And then you see this thing that it looks like a shooting star. So it's not just a typical like round circular orb. It looks like a shooting star comes down and you see it go right into the flashlight, and then the flashlight turns on. And that to me was like, okay, Christine feeling something. I ask for them to turn on the flashlight. We see the orb, and then we see the flashlight turn on. And I commented on it on the video because I was recording and I saw it happen. So that was, yeah, probably our best piece of that one. I do consider evidence. I feel pretty strongly about that one.
Definitely.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
There's a lot of things on your list. Tell me what some of the standout places are. Oh, there's one I do want to ask you about, though. The Museum of Colorado Prisons. I wanted to go there so bad. So like 2 years ago, we went and did, what's it called? The Gorge? The Bridge?
Yeah, the Royal Gorge. You drive through Canyon City.
Which was so scary, by the way, walking across. Like, I would rather be in a haunted place anytime than on that bridge again.
Yeah, if you have a fear of heights. Probably not.
Yeah. And then we were going to take the tram back over, and we're in line. We're next up to get on the little cars that go across, and they're like, oh, there's lightning. We can't go. So we had to walk back over the bridge again. But like, it was either lightning on the tram or walk back over the bridge again. And I was like, just get me out of here. But we were in Cannon City. And I made them stop at the Museum of Colorado Prisons, and we didn't have time for me to go in, but I was just like, I just want to just see it, say that I was here, and take a picture out front. Tell me about it. Tell me about it.
So my only experience there, I was actually going to be picking up my son from a camping trip and was with my younger one, staying in Canyon City. We went to the Royal Gorge, and I said, hey, there's this Colorado Prison Museum. That should be fun. Had no idea, really, didn't know. And we walked in, and right away he was like, Mom, I don't like it here. And I was like, okay, we'll move. Cause I was like, okay, I'm feeling this. And then we went into a different room, and I was like, okay, let's go downstairs. And he's like, can we leave, crazy lady? Can we just leave now? And then I was like, let me go to one more. And it was there was just a very heavy energy. And in a couple of the cells and in the basement, and it was the old women's prison. Mm-hmm. They also have one of the electrocution chambers right outside the doors. So outside the museum.
Yeah.
And you can stand and see, like, it's right there. Very heavy, intense energy. I wouldn't say a happy place. I mean, I joke that I love cemeteries. I think they're the most peaceful, calm, great places. This was the complete polar opposite. It was a really intense, heavy energy at that museum.
Yeah. It felt that way just standing outside in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Without even stepping foot in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think my son was like 8 or 9 at the time. And he was like, dude, let's go. And then I had to leave. I had to go, even though I didn't want to.
Well, did you see the creepy house on the corner out front that used to be like the warden's house or something?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I had to go take a picture on the steps of that house because I was like, this place, too. They don't talk about this place, but I know this place, too.
Oh, for sure. Well, and the prison right next to it is still active.
Yeah.
It's the old territorial prison with the big stone wall and the turrets, and the whole place is really intense.
Yeah. Yeah. I was worried that I was going to get in trouble before standing on the warden, because it's like there is a sign that kind of says maybe don't go up there. But I was like, just a quick picture, just a quick picture. I'll be like, oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, oops.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so now tell me some of these that really stand out to you guys.
Julia, why don't you go? What's one of your favorites?
Hotel St. Nicholas, hands down.
Yes.
Hands down.
Tell me about it. Where is it? And tell me about it.
It is in Cripple Creek. Cripple Creek is just everywhere. Everywhere you go, you're going to get activity. But Hotel St. Nicholas in particular, my equipment goes crazy every time I'm there, and I've stayed the night there twice now. The first time I was by myself, and I had set up a video recorder on the other bed, and it ended up dying. It didn't work. But throughout the night, somebody picked up, because I always sleep with my foot outside the covers. Somebody picked my foot up off the bed 3 separate times and dropped it.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah.
Well, first of all, you're brave to have your foot outside the covers, because everybody knows safety is under the covers. But yeah, that is scary. Well,
we investigated a room that was an operating room.
That was the one that I was in.
And, okay.
Oh. The surgical
room. Oh, okay. And, so this place used to be a hospital then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we believe we had the spirit of a nurse. What was it? It was like an hour and a half. We literally, it was a team, and we saw orbs. And when I say orbs, I mean balls of light that were moving from over the television fireplace through the room and into the bathroom to turn on a light that was in the other room.
And the light was doing something we had never seen before. So we use the Maglite flashlights for responses. Well, they'll turn on and off. But in this case, and I've never seen it happen before, the flashlight was flickering. Like, it was like strobing and
like counting.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Wow.
And then also the hallway, right? There was a hallway that every time we walked through, I almost passed out multiple times. It was suffocating. It felt like just this weight on my chest, on my neck, to the point where I was like, you guys, I'm not going down that back hallway.
Is it the one by where the pool table and stuff is?
So when you walked out of the operating room, it was to your left, and it was that far hallway that went back and down. And no one else felt anything, but there was something there that was so intense. Like, I couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
So yeah, super active. Great, great place.
Yes. Sounds super active. I'm going to have to put that on my list.
Yes, do.
And Cripple Creek, like Julia said, pretty much everywhere in Cripple Creek, you can get activity. That cemetery, that's where
Mount Pisgah,
Mackenzie and I were cussed at by kind of the Vietnam vet section.
Oh.
Absolutely told us to F off.
Well, actually, I think it told the male counterpart on our team. He did not like the other gentleman on our team. He was fine with
it. We should have listened to the ghost.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, and we also, in that same cemetery, we walked away from that section. And at one point, Mackenzie just had the spirit box running. And I said, does it surprise you that we can hear you? And this elderly woman's voice came through. And she said, yeah, kind of. And we all just froze like, holy crap.
I love that.
So
yeah,
that cemetery is awesome too. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Give me another one. What's another favorite?
I mean, I would say the Colorado Railroad Museum.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I want to hear about that.
It's one of the best EVPs that I had, and it was definitely residual energy. There's a steam engine. It's a steam engine number 20. It's one of the few in the country that's still working as an actual steam engine. Back in the 30s, it was going over Kenosha Pass and it rolled. And the engineer who was in the cabin was burned because it was a steam engine.
Yeah.
And he died 3 days later in Denver. I was in the cab where he was when he was burned. My K2 was going red. I had a real strong feeling he didn't like a woman being there. And when I went and reviewed my digital recorder, I had a man's voice saying, "Help."
Oh, wow.
When I was standing in there. So it was definitely some residual energy. But I've also had great luck in different rail cars that are there. And the Railroad Museum is crazy. We had a great opportunity with a bunch of other paranormal teams to go in and just walk around. And there were some mediums. And a man came up to me and said, "Hey, you've been here before. The people in the dining car love you." And it was this crazy, and I loved being in there, and I always get great responses. And what we talked about, and I talked about this at the Georgetown Library, I think there are certain cars that probably are haunted, but I think that that's just a place the spirits like to hang out, that part of Golden. And I don't think the Railroad Museum is haunted so much as spirits are drawn to it. And when we go there and do an investigation and open up that line of communication for them, they are there and they come to it. And so I think there's a distinction between a haunted place, which absolutely does exist, and also just drawing spirits in who are just around you, who decide, "Hey, we can communicate with these people. Let's go join the party."
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't think about that before. That they just might notice that something's going on over here and they're able to communicate somehow. So I want to go be a part of that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to add too, we got a lot of activity with children there too, like with little kid spirits that you could just feel that the energy was like little kids communicating playful with you. And I think part of that might be, I was thinking about how they do like the Polar Express event every year. And I wonder if some of those kids are maybe drawn to that. I'm not sure. But yeah, Julia, I think you and I were investigating and got some children that came through.
It was actually my daughter that was playing that game with them. So
yeah,
it was just a little game that she was playing with them. It was, you know, a type of hide and seek. So it was, you know, they'd give one knock or two knocks, you know, for where they were at, and she would have to guess where they were. And, you know, one knock for yes, two for no. And they played along with that game with her for a good 30 minutes, at least, I would say.
Yeah. And Christine, we were in the basement and we had spirit box activity and there were Spanish speakers.
Yep.
And so Christine was just speaking with them in Spanish, and we knew it wasn't radio, but I think they were also surprised that we could talk with them.
Yeah. Interesting. That's fascinating. And we talked a little bit about the melting pot restaurants already, which I'm obsessed with the melting pot. Like we talk about that on our other show too, because we love it. And we've actually created one before, like our own at home.
Nice.
And so the fact that there was two melting pots on your guys' list, I was like, wait, this is definitely meant to be to talk about the melting pot. One of the most haunted hotels supposedly in Colorado is supposedly the Hotel Jerome in Aspen. Have you guys ever been there?
I actually was just out at the Hotel Jerome last month. My husband is a chef and was out there for their Epicurean Passport dinner. And I didn't take my equipment with me, and I wished I would have, because the GMs of the hotel were telling me that, yes, there's definitely some areas in there that definitely get activity reported. So if we get invited to go back next year, I'm definitely taking my equipment with me. But that location definitely has some vibes. So
Yes.
I've also heard the Hotel Colorado in Glenwood Springs.
Yes, that's next on my list. That's literally the next thing on my list. It's a, for those of you guys listening, it's in Glenwood Springs. It's a 125-year-old hotel. And it was once a hospital that had 6,500 wounded military soldiers from World War II. And the basement had 8 cells for prisoners in there. So it's been kind of a mixed use property, but definitely I want to stay there. I've been wanting to go to those springs mm-hmm. anyway.
Oh my gosh, it's beautiful. Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Because they have a lazy river, thing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I love lazy rivers.
The hot springs are super nice. I've stayed at the Hotel Colorado before. I stayed actually with an ex-boyfriend and he did experience something in the middle of the night. He woke up and I don't know if things were moving or something was happening. And it freaked him out a little bit because he was definitely a skeptic. So I would definitely think that there's probably some stuff at Hotel Colorado.
Yeah, I think so too. And then I saw a photo and like a little blip on Highlands Ranch Mansion, which looked gorgeous.
My friend Luana has definitely investigated there and gotten some stuff, but I don't think we've been there.
Yeah, it looked beautiful. Okay, and then I just have to mention it because the Denver airport.
Oh, yeah. I think definitely there's some weird stuff that has happened at the airport or that is going on at the airport. I mean, there's all kinds of conspiracy theories, but there's so many like weird little tunnels and hidden spots. Like
the murals are so messed up.
The murals. The murals. Oh my God.
Yeah.
But can we start with just even trying to get there with that creepy blue horse with the glowing red eyes?
What's his name? Lucifer. That's his name.
Lucifer that killed the guy who made him.
Yes. The artist was crushed by him.
Yeah. And we still have him up.
I think afraid to take him down.
Yeah, maybe. And then you're right.
There's a reason he's in the middle of a field with like nothing else around him.
Right.
Yeah. And it's intense.
The murals are definitely intense. And so are like the gargoyles. And then it kind of looks like apocalyptic city in the middle. There's just weird stuff going on there. All right, my hour is up, but I just have a couple of roundup questions for you guys. These are just fun, quick questions. What would you say is the scariest paranormal place you've ever been? Mm. And you can all three have a different answer if you want.
Yeah, I don't know. It might be the same, but we did an investigation down in, was it in Mississippi?
Yeah, so I was going to say, I'm going to Colorado for this one.
Okay.
Yeah, outside of Colorado for sure. It was the... what is it called? The Beauvoir Mansion. It was Jefferson Davis's retirement estate down in Mississippi. And we did a multi-day investigation. At one point, I physically felt something like enter me. Like I couldn't stop coughing. Oh. And I remember saying like, this isn't me. And one of the guys on the team laughed and said, who is it? And I said, well, I don't know yet. But something attached to me, and we had some other crazy experiences that Mackenzie can describe in that cemetery.
Yeah. So we were in the cemetery. The K2 meter was going crazy. No reason for it to, nothing electrical around. And, we got into the cemetery and, I said, is there anyone here with us right now? And I share this story on all anytime we get interviewed, cause it's stuck with me. But this really creepy, deep voice came through and said, humans. And I felt like whatever that voice was not human. I don't know what it was. My intuition, it felt like it was otherworldly. It felt like maybe extraterrestrial, like we were being observed. And that creeped me out more than any spirit that we've spoken with. So
yeah, same with me too. And that makes me remember too. Did you guys see just recently at the Red Rocks Amphitheater that there was like the UFO sightings? Yep. And like lots of people saw it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was like a dozen or so workers. Yeah. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Julia, what about you? Scariest place?
I don't remember the name of because I was a teenager. My then boyfriend and I and another friend of ours broke into this old hotel that had burned down or caught on fire multiple times, three times, I think, since its existence. And they had boarded it up. So, you know, typical teenage boys, let's go check it out. And I was okay with it. I thought it'd be fine. We get inside, we get on just the main level, whatever we were at. And I look down the hallway. And as I'm looking down there, there is like this cowboy guy, I don't know, tall, dark figure wearing overalls, carrying a shotgun and wearing a cowboy hat. And I freaked out. And I said, I'm leaving. And I left. I got out of there as quick as I could.
Whoa, that would definitely be scary. Okay, your favorite, I think you guys already answered this a little bit, but your favorite paranormal tool besides yourself?
Well, dang it.
A lot of people say myself, but I'm like, besides that.
For me, it's the flashlight. You know, we use a flashlight and now this laser pointer, it's really fun. Really simple. Anyone can use it and we get great results with it.
Okay.
I like the spirit box and also the dowsing rods. I think the dowsing rods are such a great way to just really connect with energy and feel the energy. And anytime we have a skeptic that joins us on an investigation, or maybe it's even my husband, I like to just be like, here, try out the dowsing rods. And, you know, like I tested them on my husband and when we went to Salem in November, and he's holding them. He's like, I'm not moving them. I'm not moving them. And I'm like, I know. Like, so it's such
That's
a great
point.
Way. Like, when you can tell that you are not physically moving them and you're holding them still and they're moving on their own, I think that's a really, really fun piece of equipment.
Yeah.
As far as me, it's not a piece of equipment that I have yet, but I really want to get one. I really like getting EVPs. So I just want a really highly sensitive recorder. That's my favorite thing is when you get just a really astounding EVP. I love it.
Yeah. And then I think you guys already answered this, but I'll ask just in case you come up with another answer. Best evidence you have ever captured?
Yeah, I'm going to say for sure. Favorite piece was at 4 Mile Historic Park. Like as we said earlier, just, you know, asked if it could turn on the flashlight and if it was touching Christine, if it could turn on the flashlight, seeing that orb come down and go into the flashlight. It's on our Instagram and TikTok. So yeah, I'd love for people to take a look at it, but we don't have an explanation for what else that could have been. Pretty cool.
Is that for all three of you?
I love that one too. Yeah, well, for me, honestly, my favorite was an EVP. We were down in New Orleans at the St. Andrews Hotel, and we were conducting an investigation in the lobby, and some people came in from the street, and you actually hear the screen door kind of flap closed because we all stopped talking when they waited until they left. They walked out. You hear the door shut, and I caught an EVP saying, they're gone now.
Oh, yeah.
So they knew that we were waiting for the people to leave the lobby and like, come on, let's go. They're gone now.
And we got a voice come through that said Orleans.
Yes.
Because we asked if do you know where we are right now? And we heard Orleans.
I also, my son found one and you just heard bonjour, French come through. Yeah. Because I made him listen to the tape. I didn't want to listen to it.
Yeah. And what about you, Julia?
I don't know that I have a favorite piece. I just get excited over every new piece of evidence that we get. So new one, that it just becomes my favorite.
Yeah. Do you guys carry with you anything or do anything to protect yourself?
Yes. So I definitely started wearing like different crystal bracelets, crystal jewelry. So I have certain jewelry that I wear when I investigate, try and make sure to sage or Palo Santo, or I do have some protection sprays that I'll spray. And I think one of the biggest pieces, I just make sure anytime we leave a location to just say, okay, you have to stay here. You can't come home with me, and just verbalize that in my car before I leave a location. Those are my biggest things for spiritual protection.
So, and I just have to say, I do the same. There's certain jewelry that I wear, certain beads that I just really feel protect me. I have a necklace that was my grandmother's that I've started using that I really like. when we left the Georgetown library with the kids, I said, all right, we talked about spiritual protection. And I would say it, and they all repeated it. And it was actually really cool. We all said it together so that they got used to that also.
Yeah. Julia?
Well, I don't really have any specific jewelry or anything that per se, but I do the same thing, you know, just, hey, you can't come home with me. And I feel like I make sure that in my presence, my energy is that of no, you know, when I leave a location. So
that's exactly me too. Like, I don't carry anything with me. I don't burn anything afterwards, but I definitely have the vibe and the attitude that, and that was it. This was just me to come experience this with you. And now I'm going, and that's it. We're done here. Yes. So I feel like as long as you have that mindset, mm-hmm. Paranormal place you haven't been yet, but you're dying to go to.
Tons.
Oh, there's a list.
Me too. Oh. My list is so long.
You know, I keep saying I'm really drawn to Tombstone, Arizona. I got to visit Jerome in January. We were down in Sedona, so we hopped over to Jerome. And I really want to go to Tombstone. I really liked it down there. It was really cool.
Yeah.
I would say Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. I, in general, have investigated very positive places. So I'd kind of like to just delve into some different places with different energy and just kind of see a little bit more of how that feels. And my friend Luana's been there and I've heard stories. So it's just like, after you hear those stories and those experiences, you're like, huh, I want to see what that's about. So curious about
it. Let's go dark.
Yeah.
I really like the, and would like to go see the, it's in Japan and I always forget the actual name of it, but it's the Suicide Forest. It's just, I really love the outside locations just because it's not as, I don't know. I guess it's not as tainted. You know, it's outside. It's not something that we built, not something, you know, so maybe who knows what it actually is that's there.
Right.
Christine has been telling me about how she went to the Winchester Mansion.
Oh, yeah.
And I really would love for us to take a team trip down there and do that and go explore all of the nooks and crannies of that place. So.
And they said we could, and we are totally going to get lost, and it's going to be awesome.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. That's so exciting. That's really fun. So you guys have already talked to them?
We're talking about it.
I was there this last summer.
Okay.
And went with my family, and even my skeptic husband and sons were like, that was really cool.
Yeah.
And I talked to a docent about it, and yeah, they do let teams come in, so I would love to go back.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on and sharing your stories with me.
Thank you.
I can't wait to go to Denver next week. What's the one spooky place I should try and check out while I'm there?
Anywhere in Cripple Creek.
Cripple Creek? Okay.
If you can make it down to Cripple Creek at some point, you've definitely, there's a jail there too, jail museum, the Lawman and Outlaw. Like, there's multiple locations in Cripple Creek that if you want to have a ghost tour, there's tons of places you can hit up.
Okay. What about Denver?
We don't do a lot in Denver, do we?
I mean, honestly,
So it's funny. I will say the Railroad Museum is just in Golden. It's you can just Google it and it's really close by.
Okay.
And it's a fun, you know, railroad, but the cars, you know, you feel it.
Yeah.
You definitely can feel that energy. The
Firefighters Museum.
Yeah, I was just going to say the Firefighters Museum.
Firefighters Museum.
4 Mile Historic Park. I mean, you'd probably be hitting some of these during the day, but we do tell people you can definitely get experiences during the day. It's not just a nighttime thing. So.
Yes. Yes. Well, tell everybody listening how they can contact you if they need to, or follow you on social media and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Our social media is under XXPara, P-A-R-A, com, C-O-M-M. I believe that's our Instagram and our TikTok, I think. And you can find us under XX Paranormal Communications on Facebook as well. And I believe we have our number on there. And then I think our email is like xxparacom@gmail.com, I believe.
Awesome. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Ghost Bunny Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on my spooky adventures. And I look forward to sharing a new ghost story with you each week. Please subscribe to our podcast so you're always the first to know when a new episode is out. And follow us on social media at Ghost Bunny Podcast on Instagram for photos and sneak peeks, and at Ghost Bunny Podcast on YouTube for the video version of the podcast. Thanks, guys. See you next week. Yeah.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.